Hello and welcome to A Jungian and a Witch podcast. I'm your co-host, Molly, the queen behind Queen of Cups Apothecary and your resident witch. This is my dad, Steve, a Jungian analyst with over 30 years experience, a master's in divinity, and a myth expert. Join us as I get the Jungian perspective on a wide range of witchy topics. Hello and welcome, friends, to our next episode. Today we're going to be talking about the shadow. What is the shadow? How do we work with the shadow? Where did this concept come from? And some ways that you can get started with working with your shadow. As always, please send any questions you have to ajungianandawitch@gmail.com, and I hope you enjoy my discussion with Dad. Let's dive into today's topic. We are going to talk about the shadow and what is the shadow and where did this concept come from. We talk about it a lot in the witch community. You'll see it very frequently. Like, you know, you have to do your shadow work, and we talk about it as, you know, doing the work. So like if you do a spell for something, that you have to do the underlying work to make that happen. Like, let's take a job, for example. You do a spell to get a job. You can't just sit back and be like, okay, I'm all done, you know, and just expect it to land in your lap. You have to do the applications, you have to network, you have to be opening all your channels so that the universe and then can find a way to get you the job. See what I'm saying?
I do, but I don't understand.
You have to do the work.
Where's the shadow?
So we always talk about shadow work. So limiting beliefs, right? So you're not gonna be able to get a job if you have a limiting belief that you're not good enough to get a job, right? So that's where the shadow work comes in. I see it all the time on TikTok, on Instagram. You know, you got to do your shadow work, and they use the word shadow work. And I think that sometimes it might even be getting misused because people don't understand or have the background about what it actually means. And so that's why
absolutely.
I want to talk to you about it today.
Absolutely misused.
Definitely. So the first question off the bat is, what is shadow work and where did it come from as far as the Jungian perspective?
Jung does not use the term shadow work.
Mm.
Exactly.
Okay.
Jung talks about shadow integration. Integrating the shadow. But I would say shadow work is more of a modern concept.
Okay.
That is not exactly what Jung meant by the shadow.
Well, let's dive in. What does Jung mean by the shadow?
Okay. And again, that people say, well, the shadow is the dark side of the personality.
Yeah.
And that's actually not quite it either. Although sometimes mm-hmm. Jung says the dark side of the personality, but saying the dark side without prejudice, I mean, mm-hmm. as in the dark side is bad, the light side is good.
So like a very Jedi type.
Which Jung was against that kind of opposition of good and bad, light and dark, as a kind of a splitting. And in fact, he thought that was one of the major things wrong with Christianity, was by definition, it splits into light and dark, good and bad.
Mm. Yeah, very polar.
And that's a shadow problem. The split then puts what is considered dark in the unconscious, which is the shadow. So the basic definition of shadow is everything of which you are not conscious.
Okay.
Which is
that's a lot.
Which is 99% of everything. Yes.
Yeah, that's a lot.
It's in the shadow because it cannot be seen. It's unconscious. Mm-hmm. And so you see that's not pejorative or that it's bad. It just means in darkness there's mm-hmm. you cannot see it.
Yeah.
You are unaware. Okay.
That makes sense.
Then as you become more aware, things come out of the darkness of the unconscious and have light on them, as in somewhat the light of your personal ego consciousness, because you do become aware of something.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
All right. That's the basic definition. The technical definition is more from understanding dreams. So it is very common, as in everyone has dreams of a person, I always say, a person of the same gender and a person of the same generation.
Okay.
That would be your shadow figure in dreams.
Oh, okay.
So when you dream of a woman about your age or of your generation in a dream, mm-hmm. friend or enemy, I mean, that's just the nature of that particular aspect of shadow. That technically is a shadow figure in your dreams. Dream. Or for a man, it would be dreaming of a man of about the same age. And the age part is just generational. So if you dream of someone younger, then that would be more like a child or a teenager. And that's kind of a different figure in dreams. If you dream of someone older, much older, then that's different also, right? Like parental figure, much less even, you know, the wise old woman, you know, something like that. So this has to be a person of your generation who is the shadow, which is the counterpart of the ego. So technically, again, it's during the process of ego formation, which is like when your ego emerges and then is shaped, in other words, as a teenager, let's say ego formation, hopefully is just about done at age 18, 17, something like that. That is always what I call, you know, it's a compromise. That identity is a compromise because the poor teenager, right, is having to navigate this very complicated landscape of trying to find what works and what fits with the parents' expectations, trying to find what works and fits with his or her own social group, you know,
other peers,
other kids, plus themselves, you know, their own natural innate talents and proclivities. And then to put all that together in a single identity.
That's tough.
That's how difficult it is. And the only way it's done is that some things are left out because you can't be everything.
True. Yeah, that makes sense.
And that left out, I mean, that's a bit neutral. It's like some things are rejected and other things are accepted.
When you
say, I am this kind of person, like as an ego identity statement, then you would also say, and I am not this kind of person.
Yes.
Like I reject that. I don't want to be like that. In fact, I hate those kids who are like that.
Or their parents
or the world. And I am like this. Okay. Those things that are rejected by the ego become the shadow. They are the shadow.
Okay. Interesting. Well, and there's some fear associated with that as well, I think.
Well, the fear is the challenge to your own story narrative about who you are as an ego. And then you'd have to say the fear is that the thing you fear is true. It is true. Like, well, I identify, I'm a good person. Not one of those bad kids.
Exactly.
And then if we push you a little bit on that, it's like, well, if you're being totally honest.
There's a little piece at least.
There was this and there was this other thing and you're just pushing it away as if it doesn't exist.
Rather than addressing it,
And then that push away, see, that's the shadow.
So
starting with Freud, there's the idea, it's called the return of the repressed. You repress, you actually haven't gotten rid of it. It only means it comes in the back door. And that's the shadow. And then it's like, it comes in the back door and then, you know, something happens and you do something. And then the next day you're like, what, why did I do that? That was the shadow.
That was the shadow.
Taking over. And so in dreams, these for you, it would be other women that you dream about. It would be aspects of your own shadow, that they are parts of yourself.
Okay. So and even if it's like I'm relating to that person in the dream, it's not that I am that person. It's that I'm interacting with this person.
And that person is yourself.
But they are yourself. Yeah.
The rejected parts of yourself that maybe do need to be integrated.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense.
And so the work is looking at the parts of yourself that you don't like.
Yeah.
That's what shadow work would be.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And again, not reading books or watching something on the internet. It's much more personal than that. You can't have a thing on the internet that tells you about your personal shadow because everybody's different. And that's where dreams are helpful. The dreams tell you specifically, you know, here's this person doing this. It's like, oh,
yeah,
that's a part of me.
That's true. And
that's personal then. That's the work. It's like, well, I don't want to look at that. Like, well, because it does take a bit of moral courage to look at your shadow.
The parts of you that you don't like.
Side. Yeah. And then just a little bit going back to the larger cultural part that Jung was talking about, the splitting. Like the shadow part is that, let us say, World War One and World War Two, and after World War One, when the Nazis came in, the Germans were the highest, most advanced civilization in the world. Science.
Okay.
Still religious. You know, Germany, you've been to Germany.
Yeah, I mean.
You know, Protestant and Catholic. They thought of themselves very well.
Well, yeah, I'm sure they did.
And so when you split off the shadow part, then you can murder 6 million Jews without even realizing that you did it. Because it stays repressed. I'm not looking at that.
Okay.
And that's what happens when you split it off, is the back door. And again, then the shadow is projected out. It's like, well, it's not in myself. It's in these other people.
And
that still goes on today, of course. We're just picking historical example. It's going on all the time. This shadow.
Interesting.
So Jung,
the projection part is really interesting.
Jung was saying that the Holocaust is the number one example of this way of doing it does not work any longer. And we need something else. We can't have the split between the light and the dark and the good and the bad, because it's going to blow up the entire world.
Yeah.
So we need some kind of myth that integrates the light and the dark. And then some kind of practice, some kind of religious practice, mythological practice that allows for integrating the shadow instead of repressing the shadow.
Yeah.
The repression and the return does not work.
Yeah.
So, and you think, well, how much work would that be? And it's like, well, not only as an end, I mean, you can only do what you can do as an individual. Mm-hmm. How much work would it be for a whole culture, you know, to do that? And the answer is, we're a long way.
Yeah. Well, and there I can see that there's
so much work to
there's
be
an
done.
Element of admitting fault within yourself.
Of course.
And I think that is particularly hard for even like us as like a country, you know, just to be like, you know, we were wrong. Like, just to say that is, you know, I don't think we've ever as a country like apologized for some of the stuff that we've done that's been really messed up. And, you know, like, we've never been like, oh no, like, we were just wrong about that. Sorry. Like, I don't think we've ever, I mean, kind of slavery, like, kind of.
Sure. And then again, the historical examples, and then also just in the present day, it's like, oh, sorry, we droned your wedding by mistake. That's real.
I know. That's why it's so bad.
It's so bad. It happens all the time. And then to just not even be aware of, yeah, your country did that, does that, is still doing that.
Yeah.
But you don't want to look at it because it's too upsetting. It's too, right?
Yeah. Because if they admit it, it's real.
That's shadow. See?
That's rough. On a global scale. Yeah.
On a global scale. And then there's on the personal scale. So maybe that answers your question.
A few of my questions. Let me look at what the other ones are. So do we ever get fully integrated, and is the work ever done? Or is this something that we are going to be just doing forever and ever and ever? I think I know the answer.
Go ahead.
The answer is no. I mean, we're always doing the shadow work, right? Like, there's new things will always come up for us to have to learn and integrate, and that it's up until our dying breath we're going to be still dealing with it.
Right. And the answer is that's a good thing. See, that's a good thing. The work, the development, developing yourself, your personality never stops. You know, 80 some years of growing and growing and growing, and you to have that growth to look forward to is a great thing, right?
I always
tell people to look at 10 years, right? And they say, okay, you know, here's my age. We're going to pick a random age. Let's say age 40.
Okay.
Am I more mature at age 40 than I was at age 30?
Well, I hope so.
And the answer is, yeah, we certainly hope so. And then, but what does mature mean? You know, I wrote a book about that. But it does have to do with self-development. I see things I could not see before. Mm-hmm. Right? That's growth.
Yeah.
I know things I did not know before.
Yeah.
And yes, in 10 years, I think, I hope, you know, I've grown a lot. And then I tell people, okay, now, what will you be like when you're 50? Mm. Go 10 years ahead and say, what will you know then that you don't know now? You know, what will you understand that you didn't, you don't understand now?
Yeah.
And then a little bit the question of, and why does it take 10 years for you to know that?
And some things are so quick and some things take so long.
They take so long. And then the idea that, and then what you know at 60 and what you know at 70.
Yeah, exactly.
What you know at 80. Mm. So yes, the work does not stop, but that's, if you're growing, it doesn't stop.
Well, yeah.
And if it does stop,
you're
not growing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I guess we're always integrating new things, right? We're never done.
Well, and again, what does integration mean, really? Like you say, well,
like acceptance.
I'm doing good. That's a part of it. Mm-hmm. Is acceptance, and then the other part of it is a little bit because what is rejected by the ego that we call shadow is actually part of ourselves. There has to be room for it to have a place in life. That's kind of difficult. But it starts with acceptance. Mm-hmm. I mean, I will use a personal example.
Sure.
That I'm from West Virginia. Mm-hmm. And I left West Virginia the day after I graduated from high school. And I have never lived there since. And I was determined as a young person, 18 years old, to reject those values.
Yeah.
As in, I am not a hick.
Yeah.
And I refuse to be a hick. And I would be horrified.
You tried damn hard not to be.
If somebody thought I was a hick. You know, or because I say nuclear policy is made in Washington, D.C., people would think I was a hick. See what I mean?
Yeah.
So I erased it. Although it took me a long time to realize there's no R in Washington.
Yeah.
Okay. And that's, again, that's a part of this consolidated ego, the young person pushing away and finding, you know, that ego. But the shadow part is by splitting it like that.
Yeah.
The truth is I am a hick.
You are. You're West Virginian.
I'm a hick. I'm
you a six. Can't get that out of your blood.
Sixth generation West Virginian. I am a hick. And plus I was raised as a hick. I mean, so it's not only sort of multi-generational culture, it's also personally and in my family of origin. But by rejecting the hick for so long, talking 30 years, well, how do you integrate that? And so first comes acceptance, like you said, of like, am I uncouth? Yes, I am uncouth.
Yes.
Do I pick things up off the floor? Yes, yes, I do.
Okay.
You know, West Virginia.
Do you pick things off the side of the road? Is that what you mean?
I resist the temptation, but.
It happens. You do have a truck.
Well, that's where I'm going. It is about the truck. You know, you know the old joke in West Virginia, what do you call a dead deer on the side of the road?
Dinner.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So, for instance, a pickup truck, man, my grandfather had a pickup truck. And again, in the ego rejection of those values, I would never be caught dead.
Yeah.
Driving a pickup truck. Mm-hmm. Because somebody might think I was a hick.
Yeah. I could see the association.
All right. When I got my first pickup truck.
Yeah, the black one?
The green one, even before
the
then.
The green one. I don't remember the green one.
Yeah, 1996 Dakota. Mm-hmm. And I sat in the truck. Mm-hmm. I felt more grounded than I've ever felt in my life.
Really?
So first comes the acceptance, and then, but the living it, the grounding is... Well, grounding is like, I don't have to do anything. I'm just being myself. And I like it. Mm-hmm. See, that's me. There's not, see, acceptance, rejection, all that is just gone. Mm-hmm. It's just that, I like it. And if I feel like driving a pickup truck, then I'm going to drive a pickup truck. And I'm grounded.
Yes. That's interesting.
As opposed to having some sort of vehicle that is trying to put out an ego ideal image that is something that I am not.
Like
why would I be trying to be something that I'm not? Mm-hmm. Driving a BMW or God knows. A Tesla. I'm not going to swear because I like, see, trying to be something... Mm-hmm. There's a way to it. That's so foolish. So foolish. Mm. And unintegrated.
Yeah. Because you think just because I have this car,
I'm not a hick.
Yeah. Like
it's foolish.
But it's still there the whole time.
It is. So, and again, this growth over decades for your whole life. I mean, part of it is, where is this all going? And in the long run, it is accept yourself as you are, completely. It's okay.
Yeah, it's okay.
It's always been okay. It's like it's only in your head that you make it not okay.
Well, because there's a fear associated with it.
There is, and other people. I mean, and again, what other people?
Yeah, exactly. I think that's something since COVID that
a lot
of people are
my. Father, who is 88 years old, and he's always had cars, you know, and
he's a big car guy.
And then he was getting too old, and he had, you know, like a brand new Ford Escort or something like that, and we took it back, and then my sister-in-law had an old Honda Civic, kind of the, you know how the paint peels off, and like that. Here's this car for you. Like, you know, here's this car. It runs good. It's everything you need. Mm-hmm. All you do is, you know, twice a week.
Go to the grocery store.
Like, this will be great.
He hated it.
He hated it at first. He did. Because he, like, what if somebody saw me in this car?
Yeah.
and
Papa, who's gonna see you?
They would say, poor Dave, what happened to him? Look at that car.
Oh no.
And I'm like, who is gonna think this? Who is somebody saying this to you? Well, no one is saying it, because you know they wouldn't say it. I said, okay, who is thinking of it? Well, people are like, well, I'm like, which people? Name one people.
Right.
who is thinking this about, well,
right,
I guess I just don't feel good about it. And it's like, yes, it's in your head.
Exactly. He does. He didn't feel good about it. Well, and he ended up with the truck anyway, didn't he?
Yes, he had to go out and buy it. So he felt better.
And so he felt better, exactly.
And you're allowed to do some things that make you feel better as long as you can afford it.
Within capacity, exactly.
As opposed, but integrating it.
Well, that would have been him saying, I don't care, right? If people see me in this car. Like,
or, yeah, because why do we care about other people? And what they think of us, you know, that are keeping up with the Joneses or whatever, right? And of course, our entire culture is built around creating images and marketing and advertising. and of course, social media, so that your whole life is filled with seeing what other people are doing.
Exactly.
And hey, they're driving a Tesla.
So I should be driving a Tesla.
And they have these clothes and they have this and they have that.
Well, and it goes back to that consumer thing of what you buy the thing and it's going to change your life. Right. Like, isn't that like they want you to think, oh, you buy the car, you're going to be able to have the family that's happy going on vacation. Like it's they're selling a life and a lifestyle that doesn't necessarily.
Oh, well, not,
you know, it doesn't mean just because you buy the car, you're going to have a family and go on vacation.
It
you
doesn't
know?
Mean anything. Right.
Exactly. It's just a thing.
Like, you know, in one of my videos, I was like, you know, the Matthew McConaughey commercials for Lincoln's.
Oh, geez. I haven't thought about those in a long time.
Like, would I? And they're very good commercials because he's a very good actor.
Well, yeah.
And it's like, well, am I really open to this sort of unconscious influence of marketing that I would buy a Lincoln because of Matthew McConaughey? Like, but that's the pitch. That's the sell.
Yeah.
It's like, well, I would like to be like Matthew. Yes.
Right.
You know,
of course.
Like I could drive a Lincoln like Matthew McConaughey drives a Lincoln. And again, see the whole thing, it's so stupid.
I mean, when you get down to it, but it's like a basis of our entire economy, basically.
And I would say, as a psychoanalyst, that that's part of is that if you have a weak ego, you're trying to falsely strengthen your ego by doing what other people are doing or what Matthew McConaughey is doing.
Yeah.
That's not really ego strength. Like to borrow Matthew McConaughey's image.
Yeah.
To make yourself feel stronger as an ego. And it's like, no, you can't fake it. Like you.
Yeah, you can't fake it.
You do the work and then it gets stronger because you're doing the work.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, because it's authentic. Because when you have an authentic ego, it is strong.
Yes. And when the ego is strong enough, let's say, to face the shadow, like you were talking about, that strengthens the ego too. Instead of pretending that, well, none of that is real.
Yeah. Saying, I have no limiting beliefs.
That's pretending. It is not true. It is pretending. And pretending does not get you very far.
No. Well, and like you were saying before, it'll all come in the back end if you don't address it now.
Backside.
So yeah. So that's what happens when people have like breaks, right? Like they've been, let's say somebody has this family and they have this job and they've high stress in this career and it's, you know, not what they wanted to be doing with their life, but
and
all the pressure of being this person,
they do something stupid.
Crazy,
right?
Yeah.
That then all kinds of things happen. And they lose the job and they lose the marriage because that's the shadow.
It was all based off false pretenses
at
the beginning. So
when that happens, because, you know, people do lose jobs and people do get divorced. And it is also an opportunity to really look at yourself.
Yeah. Right.
And then that would be growth. If you can see
very tower energy.
Yes. The tower.
The tower. Yeah.
That one I'm familiar with.
That one most people are familiar with because it gets a pretty bad rap because it looks very scary. you know, it has these angels falling from this tower that's being hit by lightning. And what most people miss from that card is there are these little things called yods. They're these little yellow, weird lightning bolt looking things. And they're actually symbols of divine blessing. So like, that's the key to the card that most people miss, is that even though we're falling apart and everything is everywhere and it's chaos, it's divinely blessed and divinely guided.
Right. So, and I would say, you know, talking again about this relationship between the ego and the shadow, and then, but ego formation and the compromise when you're 17 years old, now we come to, in the long run, the midlife crisis, because that ego, the environment in which it was formed is, that was 20 years. Like, it's all, it's not part of your life anymore.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. Do you want to be who you were in high school for the rest of your life?
I hope not. That's,
I say that too. Right.
People don't realize that, I guess, huh? They just.
It's like that ego does have to fall apart.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it was adapted, hopefully, it was adapted to that situation at the time. But 20 years later, 25 years later, it's a very different situation. And that way of being adapted may not work in the new situation. And yeah, the old, but no one ever wants to give up the ego. I mean, it has to be forced away from you. You will not willingly go into a crisis.
Yeah.
And that's, again, where the midlife crisis comes, is that life has a way of doing it,
like forcing it,
forcing it, because this ego needs to be sort of taken down brick by brick, like the tower, and rebuilt in a new way,
exactly,
a more adapted way to the new situation, not the old situation. Like, you're never going to be in high school again.
Exactly. Well, and that's, I think we do accept that a lot in the witch community, is that doing the shadow work before you try to get to it before the tower needs to happen.
And, right? I don't know. Like, I don't know.
And sometimes that's not possible. But
that's right.
Yeah, I think that's funny. So my next question is about, what would be your recommendations for people who are just starting out on this? Like, when Jung, if Jung, like, what would Jung say if someone was like, I'm ready, I want to talk about the shadow. Like, where, like, are there any books you would recommend? Are there any practices you would recommend for people who are just getting into this?
The one book that is sort of accessible to the general reader is a book called Man and His Symbols. Each chapter is written by a different analyst, and Jung wrote the first chapter, and it covers most of the ground of Jungian psychology for a layperson. So that's one way to get started.
Okay. That's a good one.
The thing to do in the long run is that you see an analyst.
Well, yeah, but I know a
because I mean, you cannot interpret your own dreams. No one can interpret their own dreams, because of course in the dreams are your blind spots. And of course you are blind to your blind spots.
Okay.
You cannot see your blind spots.
That's interesting, because I was going to say, it's like starting a dream journal. Would that be a good place for people to start?
Well, it is, but you can't,
but you can't interpret
your own dreams.
I didn't know that part. That makes it so frustrating.
Now, and I know that sometimes people are in a dream group, and that there are several, internet, Zoom, things like that. I mean, there are dream groups that you could join.
Okay.
And I think it all depends on the leader. It depends on the kind of group, because group dynamics can be brutal, awful.
Yeah.
I'm not particularly a fan of groups at all.
That's like a true introvert.
Like a true introvert, yes.
Like, even just if...
But this is hard to do. The work on yourself is hard to do without some kind of supervision.
Okay. Well, I was thinking, even if someone in the... Like,
mentor.
You had a friend that you could do it with, at least... I'm trying to think of, like, cheap, easy ways that people could maybe get started on working on this. But It's tough. You need an analyst. Come see you.
Oh,
or
well.
anyone with a, what's the title again?
IAAP, International
IAAP.
Association of Analytical Psychology. Yeah, an official Jungian analyst. Yeah. They're a therapist who are saying they're a Jungian-oriented therapist.
Mm-hmm.
So,
but
which
not
means
trained.
They have read about or have some excitement about Jung's ideas without having been through the process. And again, maybe that's okay. It depends on the person. And
well,
maybe
I mean, the process is really long, right? Wasn't it 12 years or something?
Well, for me, it was 10 years. The minimum is 4 or 5.
Okay. The process. Well, any other books or practices you can think of off the top of your head that would be useful?
You see, I'm suspicious of books.
You're suspicious of books.
Self-help books, let us say.
Oh, well, definitely. Yeah.
Right. Because the kind of books you're talking about would be like a self-help book. And there are, you just look on Amazon, there's a million books about shadow and shadow work.
Yeah.
Self-help
That's why I'm
books.
Wondering if you and actually like any of them. Right
I don't. I wow. don't. Well, because it's the authenticity that you mentioned, right?
Mm-hmm.
Cheap and easy is not authentic.
Yeah. Well, okay. I never said easy.
Okay.
I just was looking for something
books,
that could be more accessible.
The
you
books
know.
That I read, I mean, if you can read a book and do it, that's easy.
I guess so. I mean, that doesn't seem easy for a lot of people. But
there's the whole thing, the whole self-help culture.
Yeah.
Is problematic
at best. Yeah.
Let's say a life coach, you know, something like that.
Okay.
Problematic because again, you are looking for someone else to tell you what to do. You're looking for someone else to tell you how to live your life.
True.
That's a problem.
Mm.
There's an old saying in Buddhist circles that was a famous book back in the 1960s.
Buddhist circles?
Oh,
the book. Sorry.
Buddhist circles, people who are into Buddhism.
Oh, no, I get that. But you said it was a book. And so I was asking.
And
what
the
book.
Name of the book and the name of the saying is if you meet Buddha on the road, kill him.
Kill him? Why?
Because if you meet Buddha on the road, that's not Buddha.
Hmm. And it's that person's a fraud because it
trying
not
to,
on the road.
Trying to sell you something.
Okay. Okay.
The Buddha is within you.
Mm-hmm.
And each and every, and each
well,
and every,
yeah.
each
yeah,
and every person. And so when you think it's out there, you're already in the wrong place.
Go to a professional is what you're saying.
Yeah. I think that's what I'm. Mm-hmm. saying, but that it doesn't mean that, you know, to read books to learn,
mm-hmm.
to stimulate your understanding. Of course. I mean, I've read books my whole life. I mean, that's why you do it. And there's a great deal to learn. And I would say, I love YouTube. I watch
YouTube
and there's so many great things on YouTube. The Jungian stuff on YouTube is a little
dry.
Oh, well, there's the dry and then there's when it's not dry. Jungian stuff for entertainment. See what I mean? So,
yeah.
For instance, there is a thing called This Jungian Life. I think
okay.
it's a podcast and a YouTube channel.
Okay.
Which is three analysts talking about
Oh,
various issues.
Yeah, I tried listening to that one.
It's very dry, right? It's
very dry.
Dry, and I find it a bit pretentious.
Yeah, I could see that.
But
they assume a baseline of knowledge.
But I'm not worried about it being misleading.
Ah, which is good.
Because they're professionals and it's authentic in that way.
Mm-hmm.
So there's that part.
Okay.
I think that's the best I can do for resources.
Okay. Well, I think it's good that we covered that, though. Well, I think that we've covered a lot. We're about at an hour. Do you have any closing remarks on shadow and shadow work? We can always review this at a later time with more in-depth questions, but do you have any parting words of wisdom?
Right. My parting words of wisdom would be that, especially online, there's too great of an emphasis on shadow work.
Yeah. I mean, we see it all the time.
That when people say shadow work, the shadow is one archetype, one out of many. In addition, like, well, yeah, there's shadow work, but then what about ego work, strengthening the ego? What about animus work, like that? What about developing a deeper relationship to the self? There are many other things that also have to be looked at, not just the shadow part.
That makes sense.
And maybe it's because it's popular on the internet because the shadow part seems more accessible to people. And the other archetypes seem much more difficult to comprehend and understand.
So maybe next week we start talking about archetypes. I know it's a lot.
Yeah.
But maybe just get a base foundation of what archetypes are. I think that's what we should do next week.
Okay. That sounds good. Okay.
Sweet. Well, Dad, I've really appreciated all of this, and I think it's a great jumping off point for the rest of the podcast, and we needed to get that baseline out there. We'll be back next week, and we'll talk about archetypes.
Great.
Well, thank you for tuning in today. I hope you enjoyed our discussion on the shadow. And I will put a link in the show notes for the International Association for Analytical Psychology, which is the IAAP, where you can find Jungian analysts near you if you want to get started on your shadow journey. I will also have links to the books we talked about. And as for my own personal recommendations for starting to work with the shadow, I recommend spending some time meditating. I know it might seem like a simple answer, but spending time with ourselves is one of the best ways that we can get to know ourselves. You can start with as little as 1 minute a day, coming back to our breathing, being in our body, grounding. These are all really good ways to be with ourselves. Getting to know ourselves, being comfortable being with ourselves, I think is a big step forward in embracing our shadow selves and integrating our shadow selves. I also recommend starting a dream journal. And this is where you just keep a journal near your bed, and when you wake up, spend a few minutes writing down your dreams. As my dad said, dreams are a big, big part of getting to know the shadow. This way you'll have a big log to look back on when and if you start your journey with a Jungian analyst. So those are just a few ideas to get you started on your shadow journey. As always, you can find us on Instagram at a Jungian and a Witch. We are working on getting our website out. But for now, if you want to learn more about me, Molly, go to queenofcupsapothecary.com. And if you want to see more of my dad, head over to the YouTube channel History of Ideas. Thank you so, so much for tuning in today. We will see you next time, where we will talk about archetypes.